Okay, today, this week is a very special, important Shabbos, being that it is Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Elul. So just the very fact that it's Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, that itself is very significant. There's a machlokes, there are different minhagim as to which haftarah we lay in this Shabbos. We are still within the Shiva, d'nechemta. So normally we have a rule that after Tisha B'Av, under no condition can we break away from the seven haftoros which relate words of comfort to Klal Yisrael. This is a problem this Shabbos because it is Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. In Shabbos Rosh Chodesh we normally relay Hashemayim Kisi Laaretz Hadoim Raglai. So what are we to do? So the truth is the Svardim is just a halachic issue, just to point out what Seder HaDvarim is. The Svardim, they lay the Haftorah of Parshas Re'eh. They lay the regular Haftorah. Whereas Ashkenazim, Nusach Ashkenaz, this Shabbos, you pay attention, you can correct the Baal Kriya in case he makes a mistake. Nusach Ashkenaz indeed lays Koyemar Hashem Hashamayim Kisi V'Oretz Hadoim Ragloi. Now you're going. What? So the Sfarim is, that's if you lay it from a Chumash. If you lay it from a, that's a general discussion. Do you lay Psukim from a different half Torah? The Gemara says you're not allowed to. The Gemara says you're not allowed to be medaleg from one Navi to another Navi, even within one Navi itself, you're not allowed to be medallic from one section to another section. Now that's certainly true when you're learning from a klaf, but if you're learning from a printed chumash, so it's no big deal to learn from one to the next. So therefore, some do have the minhag that if you're not learning from a klaf, if you're learning from a printed chumash, to recite two psukim of the Haftarah Koyam Hashem Hashem Kisir Eretz Adam Ragli in order to indicate, to remind people that today is indeed Rosh Chodesh. Okay, you should know that even those who learn from Chumash, it also appears to be a more modern practice. Years ago, you never saw this being done, because I think the only reason why they do it today is because everyone today has the art school Chumash, and in the art school Chumash it says, Yesh, Nehagim, to do this. So therefore, the art school has influenced us, and people began to change their minute. But years ago, you never saw it being done, where when even we learn from Chumash, people begin learning two, three psukim from a different Haftarah. However, it is the minhag of Nusach Ashkenaz this week to lay the regular Haftorah of Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Koyemar Hashem Hashemam Kisi V'Oretz Hadoim Ragloi Eze Vayis Hashayiv Tizuli V'Eze Moka Menuchasi. Now, what about the problem of deviating from the Shiva de Nechemta? So the commentaries explain, it's not a big deal because this Haftorah that we're going to lay in the Shabbos also includes words of Nechama. Relating this Shabbos to the very end of Sefer Yeshaya and Perek Samach Vav, and when you get to Pasik Yud, you could not have better words of comfort. Simchu es Yerushalayim v'gilui ba koloi haveha, rejoice with Yerushalayim and gilui ba koloi haveha, sisu ito masos kol hamas ablim oleha, leman tinku usivatem yushal. Have pleasure, you shall nurse, usratem, be satisfied, mishoid to tanchumeha, leman tamotsu, all different expressions of nursing, vihis anagtem, miziz kivoida, kichoyamar Hashem, hearing noite lecha kinor shalom, there are beautiful psukim, I'm not going to go to the psukim now, but there are beautiful psukim over here in this week's Haftarah, even though the main focus of the Haftarah is Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. However, there's also psukim of Nechama, and therefore it's not a violation to recite this Haftorah on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, because it also is considered to be Shiva Din Nechemta. I just want to point out that what do we do, what the Minhag Ashkenaz, that in 2 weeks from now, when we come to Parshas Kisetze, we make it up, and we lay in a double Haftorah. We lay in Kisetze Zerani Akarolo Yulada. That's a very short Haftarah. But then right after, being that in a nach, right after you conclude the last Pasuk Yud of Ki Harim Yamushu, that last Pasuk of Roni Akara, the next Pasuk leads into Aniyar Soyara Loi Ruchama. It leads right into what would be the Haftarah Parash Asra A. So we lay in that as well. So therefore, that is the minhag of Nusach Ashkenaz. This week we lay in the Haftarah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, And in 2 weeks, we lay in a double haftarah because in the Anach, the two haftarahs are back to back, we make it up. Now, what is interesting is there's an expression that we lay in Parshas Kiseitse this year, we lay in, they make an announcement, we're laying this week the haftarah of Parshas Noach. Now, what does that mean exactly? Now, this is very cute, what this means. Because Parshas Noach, what is that? Let me ask you, in a regular year, when today, let's say this Shabbos would not be Rosh Chodesh, and on a Parshas Kiseitse we would just lay only Rani Akara, would Parshas Kiseitse have the same haftarah as Parshas Noach? No. Because Parshas Kiseitse you only lay Rani Akara, a few psukim, and you stop. Parshas Noach, you begin with Rani Akara and Aniyah Sora Lo Nuchama. So on a regular Parshas Noach, you lay in the very long Haftarah. Yeah. You lay in the entire Perek Nun Dalit from beginning to end, which is a relatively long Haftarah. On a regular Parshas Kiseitse, you only lay in half of that. But this year, when Rosh Chodesh is Chal B'Shabbos, and on Parshas Re'eh, we're not going to lay in Aniyah Soyaro Loi Nuchama, but instead we're going to lay in Hashmaim Kisi, and we're going to make it up as a double after on Parshas Kiseitse. So it comes out that on Parshas Kiseitse, in truth, we're laying the identical Haftarah that you lay in on Parshas Noach. So therefore, in Parshas Kiseitse, we lay in the Haftarah of Parshas Noach in its entirety. And its entirety means both Rani Akara plus Aniyah Sara Lo Nuchama. What?
Is there a special significance to that?
There must be. Nothing happens by coincidence. You see, you're thinking like a real darshan here. So what is the significance when it comes? So maybe we get the Parashas Kiseitse, we can figure out where the marble, when the marble is going to start. What is the significance? What? Mocha Chodesh we don't do. If it's Mocha Chodesh, Shiva de Nechemta. Shiva de Nechemta is not going to be pushed off for Mocha Chodesh. Parshas Noach.
First Pasuk and the last Pasuk.
No, that's what we said, not all the time. We don't know. Some do that. Some do that, some don't. But if you're learning from a Nach, if you're learning from a real cloth, then but if you're learning from a Chumash, then indeed some have the custom to do so. So therefore, bottom line, today, tomorrow, if you're davening in a shul that davens Nusach Svard, you're going to lane Aniyah Soyaro Lo Nuchama. If you're going davening in the Minig Ashkenaz, tomorrow you're going to lane Hashemayim Kisi. And when you go 2 weeks from now, in the shul that's Nusach Ashkenaz, you're going to lane a double half Torah.
Are they one after another on the clock?
In the cloth, but yes, they are. They're back to back.
Even if you had a skip, it's the same. When you play a Chalmi skip,
you only skip when it's close, when it's very close, and it's the same inyan. It has to be the same topic of discussion. It was the same inyan. It was the same inyan. There, it's all Yom Kippurim. It's Yom Kippurim, and it's the same inyan. When it's the same inyan, or it's two inyanim, but it's nearby, then you are allowed to skip. But these. So that we answer is because this Haftarah Shemayim Kisi is also called the Shiva de Nechemta. Because it says here, Psukim Pasig Yud, tomorrow, when we lay tomorrow, Simchu es Yerushalayim Begilu Bo Kolei Haveha. Tomorrow, when we lay Pasig Yud, this Haftarah, this Pasig also counts as Nechama because of these Psukim, which also mention expressions of Nechama. Okay, tomorrow. It's also Rosh Chodesh Elul. We don't yet start saying L'David Hashem Oiri until Sunday, because tomorrow really is only the 30th day of Av. It's the last day of Chodesh Av. The first day of Chodesh Elul begins on Sunday. And Nidli D'Divi D'Dili is when we start laying, staying L'David Hashem Oiri, and when we begin to blow Shofar. Yes. Mitzvah Shabbos. Yeah. You do say it. Yeah. L'David Hashem Oyri by Ma'ariv. Mitzvah Shabbos. That's already the first day of El. Okay, now let's go to the parasha. Just a few little short things. The parasha begins Re'ev Anochi Nosei Lifnechem Hayoim Bracha Uklola. There's a drush. It's a nice. It's a drush. We just learned it in Yirmiyah. So I just meant throughout this drush. is that there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, as there's a difference. There's, when does a person have an obligation to pay his workers? We just learned today that Yoshiyahu Yehoyakim was an unethical person. Now, if you look in the Mefarshim, they explain his ethics. He deceived his workers by telling them that according to the halacha, I'm not mechuyev to pay you until you finish the job. There's a difference between a schir yoim and a poyel. When you contract with a person to do a job, you have no obligation to pay them until they finish the job. So they can work for you for 10 years, and the job is not completed until 10 years pass. You technically have no obligation to pay them their wages until the 10 years have passed. Question is, how are these people supposed to earn a livelihood during those 10 years? So the answer is, that even though you're going to give them a lump sum payment when it's over, and they're going to be multimillionaires when they finish the job, but you have an obligation to pay them at least something, a small token amount, in order that they should have their paying, be able to pay the living expenses during the time when they are working for you. But me'ikar hadin, the letter of the law, does not require you to pay your workers until they finish the job. When it comes to a schir yoim, when a person works for you daily, he's a hired worker, you have to pay him his wages daily, every single day. So there's a very big question. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he gave us the mitzvahs, he gave us the tayag mitzvahs, are we in the category of a schir yoim, or are we in the category of a poyel? When do we receive the reward for the mitzvahs? So why is schar mitzvah b'hai al malecha? So the answer is because we're called a poyel. We're called a worker. We're called a worker, and ein schirus mishtalemes ela libesoif. The schirus only paid at the very end. Now, what happens if you hire a person? I'm getting a little bit confused, so I might not say this correctly. But let's say you hire a person to do work for you daily, but you do it through an agent. I don't know all the exact details, but there is a halacha that when you hire a person through an agent, you're automatically in the category of a poyel, where you have no obligation to pay them their wages until the labor is complete. If you hire a person to work for you daily, and to work for you directly, then you have to pay them, then you have an obligation to pay them right away. So all of the Torah was given through an intermediary, was given through Moshe Rabbeinu. Being that it was given through a shliach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay, I'm getting some of the details, but whenever you have a shliach involved, it automatically, the nature of the contract turns into a hard worker to a poyel, and a poyel, you have no obligation to pay the poyel until the very end. However, there were two halachos, there were two mitzvahs that were given to us directly. Anoichi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yiyeh Lecha Elohim Achrim Al Panai. So that's how the Darshan, they start off this pasuk. Re'eh, Hashem says, Anoichi Noisein Lifneichem. I've given the Anoichi, it's a Jewish, the Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, Hashem Tisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, this Hashem says, I have directly given to you myself. Therefore, Hayoim Bracha, Kama. Hayoim Bracha. The bracha that you will receive from me, you will receive immediately. And indeed, Chazal tell us this concept. They don't tie it into this drush, that all of the reward that we receive in this world, when you see that people merit bracha in this world, it is in reward for emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The schar for the observance of the tayag mitzvos does not come to us immediately. This is something which is put away for the next world. Schar b'hai alma leka. But there is an exception. Reward for having faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, emunah b'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that reward comes to us in this world. That we do reap the benefits in this world. And that concept is captured to some degree in this very first pasuk. Because here we take the pasuk and we say Re'ei, Hashem is speaking, see, Anochi. Anochi, which is interpreted to mean Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Hashem HaSeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. The fact that I exist, the fact that I am here, Anochi is an expression which means it's the first dibra is a dibra of emuna. That no Anochi, the Anochi no sein lifneichem kama. Therefore, for this hayoim beracha, there is no agent, there is no shaliach, and the rules of Shulchan Aruch are that when you're hired directly by the employer, he has an obligation to pay you your wages immediately. When you're hired by an agent, then he has no obligation to pay you immediately. He can pay you only when the malacha is 100% complete. But being that the Anochi is being noisein lifneichem, this has been given directly to you by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, hayoyim beracha. Now, by the way, what does it mean to klala? How can we start off a pasuk with something which is negative? So the answer is the word klala really is also a bracha. Because the word klala is a rashi tevas. Ve hakaren, that's the vav, ve hakaren, kuf is kayemes, lamed is lo, the next lamed is la'olam haba. So re'ei anochi nosein lefneichem hayoyim beracha, today is the bracha, ve hakaren, kayemes lo, la'olam haba. Klal is not a klal, it's really an allusion to the fact that there's going to be bracha in the next world. Okay, now let's go over here to the next. Let's go over here to just a very, very simple lesson. Over here it says in the pasuk, Hashem presents all the mitzvos, and I'm giving you as habrocha asher tishmu el mitzvos Hashem lokech mashenoch mitzav eschem hayom vehakilala, and it's going to be klala. So Rashi elaborates. Rashi in pasuk of test, in the second part of Rashi says, Kol ha'arurim shebeparsha, all of the curses that are mentioned in the parsha, that's not really in this parsha, it's really later on, parshas Nitzav Vayelech, Amru t'chila b'loshon baruch, v'achar kach hafchu p'neyem l'klape har'evel l'paschu b'klola. They were first expressed in the form of a baracha, only then were they expressed in the form of a klala. Hashem over here is teaching klali shel a lesson. When you give criticism, criticism always has to be introduced with encouragement. Encouragement. Even the harshest criticism, which is klala, the pasuk here says explicitly, first comes bracha. Never open up a conversation with klala. Klala always has to be preceded with bracha. It's a simple word, but it's an important lesson.
Starts first with a bracha.
What?
The
Teichacha. Teichacha starts with bracha and concludes with bracha. Okay, let's now go to another idea. We have over here the mitzvah over here of destroying Avodah Zarah. Now, I want to try over here to bring out a point in a Rashi. Pasuk here says, let me read the Pasuk in the Rashi. Abe ta abdun es kol ha-makoymer sa-asher avdu sham ha-goyim. You're going to come into Eretz Yisrael and you're going to discover that the goyim have built for themselves Avodah Zarah. I want you to destroy all of these altars, all of these idols. And you're going to find these items all over the place. Asha'atem Yerushim Osemes Elohim, Al Heharim, on the mountains, Haramim, Yal Hagvaos, Vesachas Chol Eitz Ranon, Viditastem Es Mizbuchaysam, Vishibartem Es Masev Osam, Vasharim Tisrum Reish, Uvesile Elohim Tigadayun, Vibartem Es Shemam Minamokim Ahu. Then Pasuk Dal, the next Pasuk says, Lo sa'asun kei la'ashem elokeichem. What does this pasuk really mean? Rashi gives us two very different interpretations of this pasuk. Let me read you both interpretations. The first interpretation is l'hakdir la'shamayim b'chol makom. Rashi's first interpretation is when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to discover that the goyim have a custom of worshipping their gods all over the place. They don't have only one church, they have many. Wherever you go, there is another center. They have satellites all over the country where they worship idols. When you come, and that's what I'm telling you, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, Abe to Abu, I want you to obliterate all of these locations. Don't get ideas. What idea would you be inclined to learn from the guy? They worship idols. They worship idols in multiple locations. So we also will worship. We will worship Hashem in multiple locations. We'll have a shul here, a shul there, a shul there. We'll have multiple wherever we go. On every corner, there will be another Beis HaKnesses. Hashem says, "Don't do that. I want there to be a single location." It's exactly what it says on the Rashi, Beis HaMikdash. The Rashi, recording Rashi, Lo Sasun Kain. Don't do this. Lahaktir lashamayim b'chol makom. Ki im b'makom asher yivchar. Only worship Hashem in one central location. There is only one Beis HaMikdash. Period. Dovar acher. Rashi now gives us a second interpretation. V'nitatzdem. When it says lo sasun kein, it's not referring to the location of worship. It's referring to the obliteration. The goyim, the avodah zarah, I'm commanding you to demolish, to obliterate, to destroy. But don't get any ideas. Don't get ideas that you can go and you can destroy the mizbeach. If the mizbeach is in need of repair, the mizbeach will have to be put in geniza. You're not allowed to destroy an object that is holy. From here we learn mechikas Hashem. You're not allowed to erase Hashem's name. Anything that is holy may not be destroyed. It has to be put in geniza.
But I thought we say that destroying the purpose of tikkun is
not necessarily. Even destroying, there are limitations. Even when you're destroying the purpose of tikkun, that's also not necessarily permitted. That's exactly the point. Le'sasun kein davracha, when he taught them, it says in the pasuk above, you shall demolish es mizbuchaysam, v'ibadetem es shemam, le'sasun kein, ashara, le'moichik es hashem. You are never allowed, just because you want to put out, let's say you have a Sefer Torah, and Hashem's name is not the right name, right? You wrote Yud Kei Vav Kei, and you were supposed to write Elohim, or vice versa. You're not allowed to erase Hashem's name in order that you can write the correct name. You're not allowed to do that. It's forbidden.
But you have to destroy the whole thing.
No, you do nothing. You put it in geniza.
That's what I mean.
You don't destroy it.
So if makes a mistake, and
the whole thing has to be put in Seamus. The whole cloth, the entire section has to be cut out and put away.
What do you do with buildings, physical structures? I mean, how do you handle?
You take the stones, you take apart the stones, and you put them. You bury them. Okay. Every case has to be handled separately.
What did they do with the stuff when we left?
So they had to be buried. They had to be put. They had to be disposed of. They had to have the arrangements had to be made. It's right. There are things that had to be done. Well, a Beis HaKnesses can be there's a halacha. It doesn't have the full kedusha. It can be sold by the shiur tovei ha'ir. Every it's not for now this discussion, but basically the pasuk says ascharu lemeiches Hashem ulinoytzeitz aven. Here there is a warning to erase Hashem's name or to remove a stone min hamizbeach o min ha'azara. Period. Now, so Rashi has given us two interpretations of what it means leisasun kein. Now, Rashi then goes forward. Rashi now adds something. Now, Rashi is only coming to add something. Rashi, let me read the words of Rashi. Amar Rabbi Yishmael, v'chisale al daitcha sheyishol noitzin es hamizbachos. Would it enter your mind? Who in the world would do something? Who in the world would do something like this? You got to be out of your mind. A guy's going to come to the Beis HaMikdash with a sledgehammer, and he's going to start chopping down, start knocking down the mizbeach. Who in their right mind would do this? I need a pasuk to tell me that you're not allowed to knock down the mizbeach. When you come into Eretz Yisrael, when you come across an altar that's built for Avodah Zarah, the pasuk says, demolish this mizbeach. Take it apart. Take it apart stone by stone and pulverize it into dust. But when it comes into the Beis HaMikdash, don't have a hava minute to go and demolish and destroy the mizbeach. What? V'chisale al daitcha shei Yisrael noitzitzin es hamizbachos. Ella, so what then does the pasuk coming to tell you? Ella, shleitasu kima'aseihem. Don't behave like the non-Jews. V'yigrimu avoino seichem l'mikdash avoseichem sheyichore. What it really means is, don't do averos. Because when you do averos, you're going to cause Hashem's Shekhinah to depart and the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. So the Pasuk here is not telling you, don't go take a sledgehammer and demolish the Mizbeach. No one's going to do that. What it means is, don't do averos which will cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to destroy the Beis, to cause the, indirectly the Beis HaMikdash to be demolished. Okay, so this is what Rashi adds. Now, this interpretation of Rashi, Rashi is coming to give, seemingly only applies to the first, to the second interpretation of Rashi. And Rashi says, "Lo sasun chein la Hashem elokeichem." Don't do so to Hashem. What does it mean, "Lo sasun chein"? We go back to the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk mentioned two different themes. Theme number one is, don't serve Hashem in multiple locations like the Umos HaOlam. Number two, don't demolish your Mizbeach like I'm telling you to demolish them with the altars of Avodah Zarah. And then Rashi says that if you do this, you're going to cause the Shekhinah to depart and the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. Simply, this is just, I want to make a Ha'ara. Simply, Rashi is only going back on the second half of the second interpretation. Don't do averos, because by doing averos, you're going to cause the stones to be removed. But the truth is, on a deeper level, the second Rashi, when he's coming to the end, is going back on the first half of this first interpretation as well. Because we all know it to be very, very true that when you take a community and you break up the community into multiples, when you have too much division in a shul, then you have nothing. In other words, let's say you have one shul, and you decide, you know what, instead of having one minyan, where we have 100 people, the Rav Am Hadras Melech, we might as well have 10 minyanim. We'll have 10 minyanim, and every minyan will have 10 people. We're going to have multiple. When you're doing this, what in essence are you doing? The Pasuk is telling you, by doing this, you're really destroying all 10 minyanim. You're really destroying the unity of Achdus. And this is something that's very true today. Today we're breaking down, so society is being splintered into teeny, teeny little segments. There is something to the concept of Berov Am Hadras Melech. That the more you have, the more it creates a sense of unity of Achdus. The problem is people also want to be able to participate, and when you have a very big community, then people are not able to participate, so people begin to splinter into smaller groups. But when you begin to splinter into smaller groups, on every single corner you have another community, what you're really doing is you're following in the ways of the Goyim. The Goyim, they had... What does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk, Abed, that is Kol HaMekoyim, Sh'ov D'Shama Goyim, Ash'ratem Yosh Mosam, they have Al HaHorim HaRomim, V'Al HaGvos, V'Sachas Kol Yitzranon, the Goyim, they worship their idols in multiple locations. And Hashem says to you, Loi Sasun Kein, don't do the same thing. And if you're going to do so, what in essence are you doing? By splintering yourself into multiple locations, you're going to end up with nothing. That's what it says. You're going to cause the Shekhinah to leave, and then you're not going to have 10 minyanim. You think you're going to have more smaller groups. You're going to end up with nothing. The Shekhinah will depart, and you'll come away with nothing. So I just want to, just the drush, the word is that this second if of Rashi, it's not only going on the second interpretation of demolishing physically the base of the Mizbech. It also goes back on the beginning of the first interpretation of the Pasuk, where there it says that you're going to splinter into multiple groups. When you splinter into multiple groups, the side effect is you're going to cause the Shekhinah to depart as well, because there is something to a concept of Berov Am Hadras Melech. Yeah.
What you just said is, I saw it in my research. My out of the woods plot workplace, Newark, New Jersey, where there's a large Yiddish yeshiva, many different shuls of different seals. Contrast to Elizabeth, New Jersey, where there was a number of pipes, that was made of pipes,
one
the stud road.
Right.
As a result, Newark is gone.
And a chanami. More is less. The aside is more is less. And that's exactly what it's saying.
person thing. In today's real world, they all go to Long Island, you go to five towns, you go here, go there.
Dime a dozen.
In fact, Staten Island, when my cousin lives, you have a Smarty Vinny, you have up and downstairs.
Okay, I don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. That's the way we live today. Today, the derech is small because everyone wants to participate. Everyone wants to. Once you have a shul that have already 30 families, that's already the time already where it begins to splinter off. You see it. You reach a threshold. Once you get to 30, 40 families, already people are already starting to plan a plot in the back of their minds. Let's make our own minyan. Let's go start our own minyan. Because people generally have a need to feel important. Once you reach a certain threshold of 30, 40 families, then people become, there's the same guy, the same three people, they daven all the time, they lane all the time, they get all the aliyahs, they get all the kibbutzim, and everyone else is a nothing, everyone else is not important. So then there's a need to go have your own minyan where you have certain chashivas. It's true, but there's a trade-off. And the trade-off, I just want to point out, it's very interesting, this Rashi. I think, I never really paid much attention to this Rashi. Of Loisasun Kane, Rashi's primary interpretation is, don't behave like the Goyim who worship their idols in multiple locations. There was one Beis HaMikdash. There's only one place where you bring a carbon. Of course, they had shuls, there's no question about it. They had some type of batik inusias, batik midrashos, but there is still a central authority where there are certain things that can only be done in the Beis HaMikdash. So today, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we do whatever we want, there has to be a balance. There must be a balance. Okay, I don't want to get bogged down on this. I just want to make this point. We have here a very fascinating pasuk, a very important rashi. The goyim, it is the nature of the umos ha'olam to worship their gods in multiple locations. That's exactly what it says. They have idols on the mountains, on the hills, tachas, under the trees. Wherever you look, there is another idol. There is another idol. So we come into Eretz Yisrael, so it's very easy, we'll just convert all the churches into shuls. Isn't that what it says? You come into Eretz Yisrael, convert the churches into shuls. Don't knock them down, just put up a Magen David instead of the Tzelem. That's all you got to do. Along comes the Paz says, Lo Sasson came. I don't want multiple locations of service. I only want one location of service, and therefore, as far as all of these other locations, demolish them. Destroy them. They should be demolished. Only one location. Rashi, in the second interpretation, says, don't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Don't come into the Beis HaMikdash and destroy the Mizbech. Then Rashi concludes, is it shaykh for a person to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, to go take a sledgehammer and destroy the Beis HaMikdash? So what it really means is, don't cause indirectly that the Mikdash should be destroyed through Averos. So I just want to add one small point, that this concept of don't cause the Shechina to be destroyed, there should be Shomein through your Averos, is not just going on Rashi's second interpretation of actually demolishing. It's going on his first interpretation as well. Because if you are in violation of worshipping Hashem in multiple locations and splintering yourself into so many small groups, then you have nothing. You have no sense of community. You have no sense of achlus. And when there is no achlus and there is no sense of community, ultimately you'll have nothing.
That's what the facts are.
Getting up and making that drush.
What? Well, that's why I'm not. And that's why I'm not a rabbi.
But these are the facts.
What?
These are the facts.
Of course, these are the facts, but in moderation. In moderation. Like, you know, once I was horrified. I went once to a very chashuv shul, and it's clear to me as day that in this shul the rabbi has absolutely no control, no control whatsoever. The people who call the shots of the balabatim, 100%. And the rabbi is a puppet, total puppet. No, I was in this particular shul. In this particular shul, and I was hired, I come there, and it was Shabbos. So I know, you know, Mitzvah Shabbos. Mitzvah Shabbos, so everyone, you don't want to offend anyone. You'll have as many minyanim as you can possibly have to accommodate all the people who have yard site for the Neshama Yisrael the following week. Even though that's not so poshut, you want to go make a minyan in the hallway on the staircase. What kind of time is it to go daven a minyan from Ma'ariv on the staircase? What kind of time is it to go daven a minyan from Ma'ariv on the hallway? You have one minyan. Right. So someone has the yard site for his great grandfather this week, and it's Neshama Yisera, so he wants to daven, so he also has to have his own minyan. To me, it sounds a little ridiculous, but you know, you don't want to insult anyone, and anyway, so you can have your own minyan. Okay, fine. All right, I understand. Mitzvah Shabbos, you want to do it, you can do it. But here it was, I come into the shul, and it was Shabbos, it was Musaf Shabbos. Musaf. Okay, we're dealing over here. There must have been, I would say, close to 75 people in the shul. This is a number of years ago, and it was Musaf, and there were two people who had yard site. So they decided, two yard sites, so we're going to divide the shul down the middle, we're going to have two minyanim for Musaf. I thought that was over the shot, off the charts. Just because there are two yard sites, you're going to take a shul, and in the shul itself, on this side, we're going to dive in one minyan for Musaf, and on this side, it's going to be another minyan for Musaf. I mean, that's already going, don't you think it's going a little bit too far?
No?
Shabbos Musaf? This happens all the time, right? It happens all the time, all right?
But how do you...
In the hallway, Rabbi.
But how do you manage... How
Shabbos Musaf?
Shabbos Musaf in the hallway.
It's a little surprising. It shows that's a problem. So when this goes, and you when this attitude, it's one thing, you know, you have Sfardim, Ashkenazim, and the shul is too big, you don't have a shul more than 50 families, because people, fine, but when the attitude is such, where we just keep on splintering more and more and more and more, this is a violation of what it says in the Pasuk. No, isn't that what is Pasuk in the Torah? Lo sasun kein l'Hashem elokeichem. Don't. That's what Rashi says. Am I reading the Rashi? I'm not reading the Rashi over here. It says Abe Tamin. It's Kol Hamikoymos. And Loisasun Kain is don't be like the Goyim who have too many locations. Too many. You have to have some central authority. And then Rashi goes on to say that if you're going to do this, you're going to end up with nothing. You're going to behave in a way that's not proper, and that's really what you have. When you have too much, you have nothing. More. Well, Rashi is talking about the Beis Hamikdash. Certainly, you only can bring a carbon to the Beis Hamikdash. But there is truth for this as far as the community is concerned as well. Of course, you have no choice. You have to have multiple shuls, but there has to also be a central authority, a central community. All right, let's go to the next idea. Let's go forward. Okay, we have over here another short idea of Lo Yisuchal Chazal. I want to just point to a minute. Chazal tells us that Lo Asilavo, Eretz Yisrael is going to expand. And when Eretz Yisrael is going to expand, Yerushalayim is going to expand. The boundaries of Yerushalayim are going to be much, much larger, and that will have major halachic nafkamina with regard to eating meiser, and what's considered part of Yerushalayim for eating kodshim kalim. We're now also now for certain halachas and nechlamim for laning 2 days, laning Purim. Fine. So I want to show you that this idea is hinted to in a Rashi here in this week's parasha. It says over here, "V'havesim shama ki'im el ha'makom." The only place where you can do is the makom. Asher yifcha Hashem lokechem mikol shivchem losum shmo sham l'shichna yisid shuvos shama. Let's go further. "V'havesim shama," you will bring there oloseichem v'zivchechem v'yasmashoseichem v'yeshumas yedchem v'drechem v'achaltem sham. Okay, v'achaltem. We have to make sure I'm in the right pasuk. Pasuk Zayin. I'm looking for the word losuchal. Losuchal. Okay, so where is that part? That's somewhere over here. That's nearby. Give me one moment to find the pasuk. Okay, pasuk Yitzayin. It's pasuk Yitzayin. Okay, let's go further. Okay, let's go. When we begin the topic of Yerushalayim. There are two different sections in this parasha. The first section is Shiloh and the second section is Yerushalayim. Beginning with Pasuk Yud Aleph is the section of Yerushalayim. V'chayav ha'mokem asher yivcha Hashem l'kech bo l'shakein shmo sham shama soviu eis kol ha'shenoch mitzav eschem v'chul. Okay, there we go. Hisham l'cha, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Pentale olosecha b'chol mokem asher tire. Do not offer korbanos wherever you want. Ki imamokem asher yivcha Hashem b'achat shevotecha sham tale olosecha v'sham tas kol ha'shenoch mitzavecha. Pasuk Tezvav. Rak b'chol avas nafshecha. Let's go further. Pasuk Tezayin, Rak Hadam Lo Sochelu. Pasuk Yudzayin, Lo Suchal, you will be unable, Le'echol B'Sharecha, Ma'asar D'Goncha V'Siroshcha V'Yitzarecha V'Choretz B'Karcha V'Tzonecha V'Chol Ndurecha Asher Tidar B'Nuzasecha Shumos Yodecha. Lo Suchal. Rashi translates, what does it mean precisely, you will be unable? Rashi says, Bo HaKosov Litein Lo Yitzasei Al Adavar. And then Rashi says, "Rishuvin Karcha Imer Yocholata." Lo Suchal doesn't mean that you physically are unable to do so. Of course, you are unable. You are able to do so. Al Eincha Rashai. You're not permitted. You're not allowed to. Lo Suchal does not mean you're physically unable to do so. It just means you're not permitted. Kayoitzim. And then Rashi goes on to give a very elaborate example of what it means. Lo Suchal. And this refers to the time of when they wanted to conquer Yerushalayim. When Klal Yisrael came in during the time of Yehoshua to conquer Eretz Yisrael, it says in Yehoshua that they were unable to conquer Yerushalayim because the Yevusi was living in Yerushalayim. And Rashi elaborates, the Pasuk there, so let me read you part of these words of the Rashi, the Es HaYevusi, it says it's Pasuk in Yehoshua, Yoshve Yerushalayim, who lived in Yerushalayim, and that, notice, that's the city here. That's the city that we're discussing over here in the Pasuk. Lo yuchlu b'nei Yehuda lohoyrisham. They were unable to conquer. They were unable to drive them out. So Rashi says, really? Does you mean to say that Yehoshua and his army were physically weaker than the Yevusim living in Yerushalayim? They were not able to do so. That's not true. We have a legend that they were able to easily evict them from Yerushalayim. Rather, what it means, lo yuchlu, means they were not permitted. And it's more than just, and why were they not permitted to do so? It was not yet the time. Because Avraham forged a covenant with the Yevusi, with an Avimelech, but it's more than Avimelech, it's the Bnei Ches. The Bnei Ches, when Avram bought the Me'oras HaMachpelah, there is a relationship between the Me'oras HaMachpelah and Hebron. There are two cities. This is a topic we want to discuss. It's one of the major centerpieces of Rabbi Wolfson's Sefer Emunah Sitecha, is the relationship between the twin cities, Yerushalayim and Hebron. Hebron is the hidden city, and Yerushalayim is the revealed city. They're twin cities. When Avraham purchased the Me'oras HaMachpelah, they made a t'nai with the people in the Me'oras HaMachpelah, the Bnei Ches. They also had the legal title to Yerushalayim, that he would not conquer Yerushalayim for a number of generations, for a period of time. And that contract did not yet expire, for different reasons, did not yet expire at the time of the conquest. Therefore, as so Rashi, so all this is in Rashi, I'll read the words of Rashi, Av encha v'shak yotzba v'sehivusu yoshi v'shvam yolu yuchlu b'nei Yehuda lo hayrisham, yicholim hayu, they were able, elo she'enon rashoyin. Why? Lefi shekaras lohem Avraham beris. Avraham forged a covenant, kishalokach mehem me'oras hamachpelah. Oh, you'll say, what does the Yevusim have to do with the Bnei Ches? The Bnei Ches were the ones who had title to the Me'oras HaMachpelah. V'lo Yevusim hayu, ela Chitiyim hayu. Because the truth is, the people that were living in Yerushalayim were not Yevusim. They were descendants of the Chitiyim, Bnei Ches. Ela al shem hu'ir sheshmo Yevus. They were called Yevusim because that was the name of the city, but they were descendants of the Bnei Ches. And it goes on to prove this to Mother Pesukim. So what are we trying to make over here? I think Rashi over here is saying something very deep. When it says in the Pasuk, Lo Yuchlu, first Rashi says it's not to be taken literally. It does not mean that you're not physically able. It means you are physically able to do so. It means you're not allowed to. But then Rashi goes on to say it's not just that you're not allowed to because of a halacha, of halacha. There's a halacha you're not allowed to. It's not a halacha. It's not yet the time. The time has not yet arrived. So the question over here is, what then does Rashi over here mean? The pasuk over here, how can you take this Rashi, where he's clearly telling us, lo suchal, you are unable to do so because the time has not yet come. In this pasuk, we are discussing Eretz Yisrael, and the pasuk is telling us, you're not allowed to offer sacrifices anywhere you want in Eretz Yisrael, outside of Yerushalayim, because lo suchal, because you're not able to, because the time has not yet arrived. That's exactly the point. The point is, there will come a time in history where you will be allowed to offer sacrifice or to eat the basar of kachim anywhere in Yerushalayim, because it says explicitly in the Medrash that lo asilavo, Yerushalayim will be expanded to include. We even learned in Yirmiyah, in the beginning of Sefer Yirmiyah, that Yerushalayim will be expanded to include a major chunk of Eretz Yisrael. So the pasuk over here is alluding to that you're going to come to Yerushalayim. You're going to select Yerushalayim as the Beis HaMikdash, the makom that the Shul is going to rest. You're going to build a wall. And the Yerushalayim, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, is going to be limited to what's inside the wall of Yerushalayim. Now, don't get any big ideas where you think you can eat your Meiser Sheni, where you can eat your Neter Revai, or you can eat the meat of the Kachim outside the wall of this Yerushalayim. Because the Pasuk says, Lo suchal le'echol b'sharecha. You are unable to eat in your own gates. Masar degoncha v'siroshcha v'yitzarecha v'chores v'karcha v'tzonecha v'chol nirecha sher tidar. You're not able. What do you mean you're not able to? Rashi says very clearly that the precise meaning of lo suchal means the time has not yet come. Totally changes the meaning of this pasuk, and basically means there will one day come a time when Yerushalayim will be expanded to the point, to the location, to the point where you will be able to eat kachin in this location, where in other parts of Eretz Yisrael. So this pasuk over here is hinting to us that Yerushalayim will indeed one day be expanded. Okay, let's come to another quick verse. We say five times a year, Chazak, Chazak, Vinis Chazek. What does this mean? Chazak, Chazak. This week is not Chazak. What does it mean? Chazak, Chazak, Vinis Chazek. So we say this to the one that gets the Aliyah. I think over here there's a remez to at least the drush of what this means in this week's parasha. This week's parasha tells us to be strong and not eat blood. Blood, ki adam hu nefesh. So where do you have the pasuk? Which pasuk is it? Which pasuk is it? It's over here somewhere.
Right before Aser Taser, right?
Towards the end?
I think
pasuk. Pasuk, yeah, here, right, you got a good one. Pasuk of Gimel. Pasuk of Gimel. Look at Pasuk Perig Yudbeis Pasuk of Gimel. Rak Chazak Chazak Levilti Echol Hadam. Now Rashi says, Vimashenemar Chazak Atolome. The fact that the Torah has to tell you to be strong, Atolome Shahoyu Shetufim Bidam Lo'achla. This indicates that the Yoitzei Mitzrayim, they loved blood. It was a delicacy. It was a treat. You go into your local candy
blood
store.
Pudding.
What?
It's a thing called blood pudding.
Blood pudding?
Yeah.
Today?
Yeah.
So it says here that this was a delicacy. And Klal Yisrael had a very difficult time weaning themselves off from this delicacy. They go to their local candy store, and there on the counter is a bottle of blood. Delicious. Delicious blood. It was a delicacy. When they went through the midbar, they were these I don't know, what are they?
Michael Elaine, you said he used to drink a quart a day.
A quart of blood a day.
That was what made him strong. But then he stopped because he almost died from it. He coagulated in his throat.
Wow.
He almost died. So then he stopped. Jack LaLanne.
Jack LaLanne, okay. So Mimash Lemachazak Atol Lamed Shahayu Shitufim Bidah. Therefore, that is why Hashem tells Klal Yisrael, listen, I know you're having a hard time. I know it's difficult. I know where you're coming from. You're used to doing this for years. But listen, you got to cut it out. It's like you got to quit smoking. You're addicted. It's not easy. We'll help you. I'm going to send in a couple of therapists. I'm going to send in some experts. They're going to help you get yourself weaned off blood. That's why it says chazak. And then Rashi says just the opposite. Rabbi Shimon ben Azai, he says, "Omer loy ba kosef elo lehazhircha ulamdecha ad kama ata tzorich lehischazek b'mitzvos im hadam pumfakert." Blood is disgusting; it is utterly detestable. And yet, even something that is detestable im hadam shukal yishamer, no one has an assign. When you walk into the candy store and they show you a can of blood, even if they'll pay you $1 million, they'll pay you to drink it. Not me. Okay, I'm not interested, no matter what. Even that, which is detestable, the Torah says, you have to be mechazik yourself when it comes to Torah on things that are detestable. Al achas, kama v'kama, how much you have to be mechazik yourself in things which are desirable. Im hadam shukal lishami mimenu shein adam misav lo hutrach lechazekcha behaz harasai kal v'chomer l'shar mitzvahs. So I want to say a drush. That's what we say 5 times a year when you recite the Torah, recite the various chumashim, chazak chazak v'nischazek. You say a double chazak. You go through the entire Torah, entire Chumash, and in the Chumash there are things which are very easy for us to relate to. I have no yetzirah to worship idols. Who today in their right mind would want to bow down to a stone today? Today there's no yetzirah. It's very easy. And then there are things that are very difficult. Macholos or asurois, arayos. These are things that are a continuous struggle. These are things. When you Messiah, you see over here from this Rashi says that chazak has two meanings. Chazak sometimes can either mean things which are very easy, but still you need to mechazek yourself. Don't be fooled. You don't know when the Yetzirah will get a hold of you and make you do things that are totally outrageous. And then there are things that you need chizik, which are indeed a battle. We take both of Rashi's interpretation and we say, we recite the Torah, chazak, chazak. If we will learn from what we have learned, we will mekabel upon ourselves to strengthen ourselves in the things that are difficult, and also to be on guard, to be mechazek ourselves in the things which are easy, because that's what Rashi says. Then v'nis chazek. Then indeed we will be guarded from all sides. If we're only going to be mechazek ourselves from things that are easy, then we're going to get swept away by things that are hard. If we're only going to focus on things that are hard, you never know, we're going to be swallowed up. You never know when the Yetzirah is going to chop you. This? I never in my wildest imagination thought I would do this Avera. This Avera is not something which I have. You never know. The Yetzirah is very clever. He'll get you. You have to be on guard for everything. Things that are simple, things that are difficult. In the Mela we say, we take Rashi, because how often in the Torah do you have Chazak? You don't have Chazak in the Torah too often. If you have Chazak in the Torah only in one or two places, you got to take those Chazaks and you got to see when we use it in our Nusach HaTfilah, there must be some deeper meaning. There's a double Chazak, this Rashi tells us. Chazak for Dvarim that are simple, Dvarim that are difficult. So we take a say, Chazak, Chazak. If we'll be Mechazik ourselves, Mishneit Stodim, then the Nischazek. Then we will be secure. We will have true security. We won't have to worry about coming into trouble. Okay, in this week's parasha, we learn it says twice in this week's parasha, Utrumas Yadcha. What is Trumas Yadcha? All the various types of matanas. There's Meiser, and there is Truma, and then we have a whole long list of things, but we say over here Trumas Yadcha, and Rashi twice says, Trumas Yadcha, Elu Habikurim. In this week's parasha, it refers to Bikurim. what you could be from so I just want to tell you a beautiful verse from Rav Pam. I probably told this to you once before. It's a very famous Mishnah. It's the first Mishnah. Rav Pam's Yahrzeit was yesterday. So in honor of Rav Pam's Yahrzeit, he has an incredible vart, and that is the first Mishnah Masech, the first Mishnah in Shas. Everyone knows the first Mishnah. May Emosai Koyrin Esashma the Arvis. When is the earliest time that one can be Makabel Ol Malchus Shemayim at night? Misha Shehakoyhanim Nichnasim Le'echol Bitri Masar. When Koyhanim can eat their chuma. So Rav Pam's question is, what is the single meaning of the Mishnah? A Kohen is Tameh, he requires Harev Shemesh. He goes to Mikvah in the morning, and he has to wait, he requires Harev Shemesh, he has to wait for the sun to set, and when it says HaKoychavim, he's now Tohar, and now at that moment in time, he's tar. He's 100% tar and he's allowed to eat truma. The question is, okay, I'm getting some of the details, but he has a long series of questions, very serious questions, is, what do you mean? You're not allowed to eat truma before you say kriyashma. Misha shakai hanem nechnasim lechel b'tshumasan. A koyein is not allowed to eat, I don't remember all the details. I'm getting some halachic details, but the basic question: how are Kohanim allowed to eat shuma when it gets dark before you recite Kriya Shema? You're not allowed to eat before you recite Kriya Shema. So yeah, he has a lot of questions. To make a long story short, we don't have to focus on the halachic details, but the hashkafa is something important. Is whoever told you that the first mission of Shas Lechol b'tshumasan means tshuma gedoyla. It means bikurim. And what's the proof that it means bikurim? This week's parasha. Rav Pam's Yahrzeit, as well as parasha Asra A. Utshumas yotcha. Tshumas yotcha elu habikurim. Now, that's a game changer. Besides the fact that it answers a lot of halacha questions, why it says tshumasan. I think one of the main things, why does it say tshumasan? Their tshuma. It should say le'echol bitruma. So one of the answers, because truma is mamon gavaya, is Hashem's, it's not theirs. Bikurim is yours, it's chulin. When you give truma, bikurim, to a koyein, the koyein it's his to keep. So therefore the word bitruma son is a much more appropriate expression to describe bikurim than it is to describe truma. If we were describing truma gedoyla, it should say le'echol bitruma, not bitruma son. So the fact that Truma's son, it indicates that we did something with their property. But it also explains why the Mishnah, the very first Mishnah in Shas, and why the very first mitzvah a person has on a day, begins with Truma. Because what is Truma? Truma is the first. It's the first fruits. It's not only the first fruits. It represents everything a person is yearning for, the ratios of everything. Truma is not the first. Truma, what is Bikurim? Bikurim is a person he planned. Rashi laid in Parashat Kisavo. A person plants a field. And he goes out to the field and he begins to see a fruit, a fig blossom. What does he do? He takes a blade of grass and he ties the blade of grass around this fruit. And then he comes back a little bit later and then he takes it and he brings it in a gold basket and he marches to Yerushalayim. And everyone in the field stops, and they clap, and they sing, and they give him brachas. And he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, and they have a ceremony, and they have musical instruments, and he puts it down, and he comes to the Kohen, and he says, Arami Oved Avi. There is so much pomp and ceremony that accompanies Truma like no other mitzvah. From the very beginning of its budding until it's presented to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash with the Hakaras HaToif, it's the nusach that we use for the Seifa Yisias Mitzrayim. It's everything, Bikurim. Only after you give Bikurim, now you can first start doing everything else. Now you can start with Truma, with Meiser. It is the true beginning of everything. Therefore, it makes a lot of sense why the very first Mishnah, Masech the Brachos, begins, Me'emosai Koirin Shema Ba'arvis. When does a person begin to recite Kriya Shema Kabul Ol Malchus Shemaim, Hashem Elokim Hashem Echad? We associate it with a pro. Now, again, you have to remember that represents spirituality. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is the ultimate, is the beginning of spirituality. We take the object that is the first material object, the ultimate first object of choymer, of matter. I'll give you another example. What does it say in Kriya Shema? When do you say Kriya Shema? Kriya Shema is when you can differentiate between blue and green. Either blue and the tzitzis, the first mani yamar, the second mani and blue. What does it say in the mafarshim? What does it mean green? Green means grass. You wake up in the morning, when you, what is blue? Blue is the color of the sky. And what is grass? Grass, the earth. When you wake up in the morning and you can differentiate between ruchnius and gashmius, between blue and green. Blue is the shemayim, green is the grass. Now you know it's time to recite. It's to recite Kriya Shema. When it comes to Kriya Shema as well. When is the earliest time to come into a world of spirituality? Hashem Elokim Hashem Echad. When you begin to appreciate the beginning of the material world. The beginning of your material blessings. Bikurim. Because Bikurim takes you back to the time when the fig began to blossom. When it began to blossom, you're already, that's the very beginning. And the entire, that, we want to trigger that machshava in your mind in order to remind you that's the same way you have to be mekabel ol malchus shamayim. From the very budding of a recognition that there's a ribbono shel olam in this world. We connect Kriya Shema to Bikurim. This is from Rapam, and it ties into the Parsha, and it ties into the Zyurt site. May you all have a wonderful Shabbos.